Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Well, I'm hoping in an attempt to raise the standard, raise the level just a little bit, editor-at-large at My Broadband, Jan van Meulen, is going to assist us. Jan, I'm getting more... Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
So you've got a very, very difficult task ahead because, you know, the standard of conversation so far this morning has been really through the roof. It's been stratospheric, as you could hear.
Yep. Absolutely. I would say though that sometimes it's very important to just have a laugh.
Well, exactly right. I'm trying to tell our listeners that they are not buying into it, not one bit. But nevertheless, Jan, I'm becoming increasingly concerned, and you and I chatted about it on WhatsApp yesterday. I mean, we both still do have WhatsApp, but have we reached a tipping point where we are suddenly looking up from our honeymoon phase or our honeymoon period with big tech and saying, hold on a minute. Have we given you guys way too much power for our own good?
Yes, it's been something that's been building up over a long time. Someone like me who didn't grow up with the internet. I had some of my more formative years with the internet, you know, got to experience it from dial-up days
all the way through. You just own it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But with that age comes a level of experience of, you know, pre-internet, early internet. And those early internet days, I remember as being incredibly optimistic at this tool and what it could mean and how it could connect everything and what it could possibly mean when, you know, as we connect everybody, you know, that was sort of the ultimate goal of anybody who had touched the internet, is to figure out a way to bring this to everyone, right? It's been a long path and it didn't turn out the way we thought. Instead of, you know, everybody getting a low cost PC, everybody has a phone. That they use to access the internet and various services on it. But that optimism for the internet has slowly, for a lot of us, morphed into a kind of disappointment. And, you know, seeing what's happened with Facebook, and not just Facebook, but, you know, Google, Amazon, any big tech company, Apple, to a degree, Apple being the best of the lot, as things stand, has been eye-opening. You know, it's sort of that quote from Batman resonates. You either die the hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
I love that.
And so, you know, I remember being at university when Facebook started rolling outside of the universities it was targeting, and how interesting and exciting this new communication tool was. But over time, and I think things came to a head, at least in South Africa, last year with the release of The Social Dilemma, where everybody who has Netflix watched this, docudrama on how the social networks infect discourse, affect you, manipulate you, and do everything in their power to keep you engaged so that, you know, they can make money off of you. And, you know, I've got many problems with a social dilemma, but, you know, if it just got people to think a little bit about what they're giving up when they're using these social media platforms, then that was a win in my mind. And so now, we're seeing major pushback against especially the likes of Facebook, Twitter to a lesser extent, because of, all these compounding factors. In the US, was sort of the beginning of the end was when, Facebook was implicated in, being used to disseminate propaganda that swung their elections. And that propaganda could come from outside. You know, it's one thing if the Trump campaign, you know, does stuff to manipulate people's votes, you know, uses lies to manipulate people's votes, or the other side, for that matter. But, it's another thing entirely when your three-letter agencies say, hey, mm-hmm. listen, there's a chance that Russia, had an influence here and we're trying to, have a say in our elections. And, you know, also not unprecedented, but when you can pinpoint the source and the means with which this is done, then you mustn't be surprised when, you know, the states and legislatures come down on you like a ton of bricks.
Right. But the problem is, and the way I see it, is it doesn't seem to be about state legislators. It now, all of this is in the hands of these tech giants. So Twitter decides that Donald Trump is dangerous, but the Ayatollah in Iran is, he's just yep. exercising freedom of speech. Now that means, and we don't know what this body is. So when somebody challenges something in a court of law, there's a visible and transparent process. I got a complaint yesterday. On Facebook, and it would seem to me the trend that I'm seeing is that somebody doesn't like me. Well, I mean, I can tell you a lot of people don't like me, but that's beside the point. And what they're doing is just reporting some of my posts. Now, I wrote an article, yes. News 24 yesterday about the anxiety being airborne, and how we deal with that. There was absolutely nothing offensive unless you happen to be anxiety, maybe. And somebody reported that, and Facebook said me a thing to say it doesn't conform to their guidelines. Now, I mean, the fact is that's complete nonsense, but it's happened yes. two or three times in the last couple of weeks. Yes, I can click a button to challenge it, but I've got no way of dealing with this. And we yes. see, and that's on a really ridiculous, irrelevant, small basis. We don't know. We didn't hear the, in inverted commas, trial of Donald Trump behind the scenes at Facebook and Twitter. That yep. is very, very dangerous, because yep. we don't understand why the Ayatollah can say death to Israel and to Jews, and that the Holocaust didn't happen, and that it's all the most terribly dangerous things. But we can't, we've got no access to it. If Facebook decides that some Ugandan account, there might be absolutely right. But they are everywhere at the moment and having a very powerful influence on the future of the world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. And there's been, especially in the wake of this high-profile banning, right, banning the president, the current sitting president of the United States from these social media platforms, disregarding the fact for a moment that before Barack Obama, no president had access to any social media in an official capacity. All of a sudden, it's thrown into stark relief or raised questions about, hang on a second, so you're applying, you know, these policies pretty selectively. So sort of the more powerful a person is, the more protections they enjoy, but once, you know, they overstep a certain line, then that's when you act against them. Mm. And so that's, you know, it's raised a lot of questions for folks. And I guess if you want to be cynical about it, Facebook had taken, Trump's campaign money, not his campaign's advertising funds, his marketing budget for the re-election, and was more than happy and stood in front of Congress. Mark Zuckerberg stood in front of Congress where they were challenging him about the fact that he was allowing political advertising on his platform where that was just outright lies, that were not being fact-checked like other posts were being fact-checked. And Mark Zuckerberg basically defended being able to do that as a form of protected speech and was happy to take the Trump campaign's money. But now that the chips are down, now that, the ultimate you know, now that the chickens are finally coming home to roost in the form of an attack on the U.S. Capitol building, now they act. And it's sort of like, yeah, but, you know, you might have been able to prevent this if you had acted when, you know, a bunch of people were telling you, listen, this is going to end in tears. And so, I mean, obviously hindsight's 2020, but like the fact is, you know, there are a lot of people who foresaw that there were going to be dire consequences to allowing someone to incite, you know, millions of followers like this. And you know, only,
but the point is,
know,
this, the point is this, Jan, is that a lot of people will say to you that, we'll say no. In fact, he didn't incite, and we'd like this to be something that is publicly debated. It's no longer able to be because this has been removed. And what I find fascinating as well is Twitter, of course, as a company can say, you know what, if you don't like our, if you don't like the rules of our platform, then go elsewhere. People go to Parler, which I'm not on, and I don't really know, how bad it is or isn't or was or wasn't, but then AWS comes along and says, actually Amazon says, no, we aren't comfortable with what we see going on Parler, so we're not going to provide you with the tech. And if you read what the statement from the CEO of Parler, all of a sudden everybody within that grouping is saying, actually, okay, we're going to follow Amazon or AWS because they're very, very powerful and we're going to have nothing to do with you. And all of a sudden, that whole business disintegrates. So what happens is we land up being distilled down to some very, very few, very powerful, too powerful in my view, platforms where they get to decide at their own discretion behind closed doors where we don't have access to a decision-making process, where we don't even know if the people be making the decisions are qualified in international law or propaganda or anything else like that, and they get to determine what the entire world can or can't read. To me, it's a big concern. It's sort of Ayn Rand's The Fountain. It's all of these things happening.
So a couple of things. So there's a lot of focus on a couple of high profile platforms as there's, and competitors like Parler and Gab and so on because of the level, because of the demographics that these platforms attract, right? But there are actually lots of alternatives out there that just happen to be, not in the limelight at the moment. There are many alternatives to Facebook, but people vote with their time, and it's about critical mass, right? So the fact is that everybody you know is on Facebook and Twitter, and so and WhatsApp or you know, insert, you know, a big social network here. So that's where you go. But there are lots of alternatives. Mastodon is one. Diaspora is one that was launched, you know, at a height of negative sentiment towards Facebook years ago. Didn't really go anywhere because it's a bit of a techie tool and stuff. It's not as easy to necessarily use as Facebook is. There's MeWe, which had or has Tim Berners-Lee as one of its advisors. Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web, is also working with MIT on a project called Solid to help re-decentralize the web. That's not, you know, nearly there yet. It's, you know, still in very much in development. But even though, Parler was effectively deplatformed, I think the biggest concern for it is getting kicked off the app stores because there's no way, you know, you can get sideloaded on Android, which many people are just not going to do. There's no way to really get back on Apple. You know, once they've kicked you off of the app store, but you can find other hosts. You can find other, you know, if Amazon doesn't want you to host your stuff, you can find someone else on the internet who will host your stuff. There are people on the internet who for money are willing to host the most objectionable stuff.
The amazing thing is that I'm not arguing for objectionable. I might be considered that's objectionable by some of our listeners, especially today. I don't know why. I don't know what's wrong with them today. But all I'm concerned about is this dominance that they, in many ways, that have, that they have more power than most governments. Jenny says Facebook was very happy to let the posts, and Twitter for that matter, let posts incite violence during the Arab Spring. They were even proud of being the vehicle for change, but apparently the same principles doesn't apply, in the United States. And that's the biggest problem. It's the what about argument. You ban Donald Trump. What about the Ayatollah? There are Hezbollah has a Twitter account where they recruiting and offering training. They declared an international terror organization, and they're on Twitter openly recruiting people for training. But somebody like Donald Trump, a president, a democratically elected president, is removed. That's surely got to be problematic if you look at it in that context.
In fairness, so we're devolving into political discussion here, which is not my forte. I'm a technical guy, but
I have the gift of being neither.
from everything that I've seen about what happened during the attack on the Capitol building, right? Donald Trump is a democratically elected president, but there is an argument to be made that he was specifically trying and has been over the course.
I agree. I'm not disagreeing with that.
Sure. I just want to make a I was making a point to the listener, right, who sent in a message. So there is an argument to be made here that over the course of his presidency, Trump has steadily undermined trust in independent media and fact checkers. So. And through so doing, made it that he can basically say that anything that the media says is a lie, and his followers would fall in line with that. He's slowly turned his support base into a cult, right? He's happy to jump on board with things like QAnon. I happen to know the South African behind QAnon because he was a tech journalist here locally.
Wow.
Before, I'm not huge good friends with him, but I've sat around tables
with
him.
You're mixing interesting circles, Jan Vermeulen.
He was a good guy. I don't know exactly what happened. But like, you know, that Trump is willing to use QAnon, which itself has nearly resulted in violence, where people rock up with, assault weapons outside Comet Pizza. You know, if you watch, there's a documentary on this on Netflix as well, where you can see the guy, you know, eventually surrenders when he realizes there's nothing. He went in there with a gun, was like, show me the basements, show me, you know, like, and so he goes through this thing step by step and doesn't find what he's looking for, and then eventually surrenders to the police. There's an argument to be made here that Trump was trying to overthrow democracy in the United States. And so that cannot be ignored. So when we talk about, comparing what happened in the United States to the Arab Spring, one has to be careful, because in many of the countries where these protests happened, they were pro-democracy protests. They were protests to overthrow dictators. To get democracy going. In many cases, this didn't happen, right? It's sort of like a French Revolution scenario where you overthrow the one government and just end up with the worst dictator, right? Yeah, in some countries, it went better. It actually had a positive outcome. Now in the United States, what happened was that someone claims that the election was rigged and therefore this is not democracy, against all the data that we have, after so many states looked at the challenges brought by the Republicans in the Trump campaign and said, no, you don't have a case. The amount of voter fraud is fractions of a percentage, where they were able to find it. It would not have affected the election in any sense. And so, we've recounted, and now it's done. The election is certified. And despite that, the incitement continued. And so I think an important distinction needs to be made between pro-democracy protests and protests that sought to undermine democracy. And so, sorry, that's just my response to the one listener who wrote in.
Yeah, interesting indeed. Yeah, we do need to leave it there. It is a fascinating conversation and one that we can certainly continue having, and I'd like to continue having it, but we are out of time. It's definitely something that we need to catch up on and have more conversations about, because we need to think about these things, and we need to think the best way possible, because I think what you're saying is absolutely valid. So if he was inciting, and certainly he had built up, as you say, this following over the last while, well, what is the best way to deal with it if we're saying that we are scared of censorship? Jan van Meulen, editor at My Broadband, thank you for an incredibly interesting conversation.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.